Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with Jim Packard as we are into another day of our Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. Giving now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 keeps this program on the air and only takes a couple of minutes of your time. So invest in your future listening by donating now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And Jim Packard, always pledge goals and totals. What have we got for us
today?
We
have to start off with a goal, and so our goal today is 70 calls. Last hour, the goal was 50 pledges, and we heard from 34 callers. Yesterday, we had a wonderful day. We were looking for 70 pledges during this show and got 90 calls, so we did very well, and we hope that we'll stay on that track today with another goal of 70 pledges. The goals are extremely important in that they help us stay on track financially so that we can keep the discussion going on Wisconsin Public Radio. So take a moment right now and give at WPR.org. or at 888-202-2552.
And in just a moment, we'll be talking with Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison and John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates of Fitchburg about home improvement and repairs. And discussions like this on the Ideas Network are really possible because of your financial support. So I hope you'll give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And as a special thank you, we have a book that we're offering. It's How to Operate Your Home, an Owner's Manual for Your Home. It's the second edition, and it's a great book, and it's yours for a pledge of $100 or more. The important thing is to make a gift at any amount, frankly, right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Supporting Wisconsin Public Radio is one of the best things that you can do with about 3 minutes of your time. You give us your name, your contact information, how much you'd like to give and how you'd like to pay. And whether you call or pledge online, we'll keep your personal information safe and reveal it to nobody. Your gift right now will turn into the stories and the programs that keep you connected to the world. So give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And Jim, I did want to mention a little more about how to operate your home, the owner's manual for your home. There are over 400 drawings, simple explanation that describe the operation of the structural, the electrical, the mechanical systems in your home. Hundreds of solutions to common problems. This book will give you information you need to effectively operate and maintain your home. And so I hope you'll keep that in mind as you make your contribution of $100 or more. We'll send you a copy of the book. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
On the Ideas Network, you hear from the person who wrote the bill, the person who wrote the book, the person who has unique expertise, and we're glad to seek these people out and get them on the show, and privileged, in fact, to do so, but we need your help to make it possible. Make great radio happen right now. Give us a pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And for a pledge of $120 or more, we'll send you the book, but for $10 a month or more, we'll be happy to send you the WPR member card. It's the card that gives you 2-for-1 entrees at restaurants, B&Bs, 2-for-1 green fees at golf courses, 2-for-1 admissions to cultural attractions. It's a great benefit, fitting benefit for a statewide network like Wisconsin Public Radio. These venues are all over Wisconsin. So pledge your support right now at WPR.org and get the member benefit card for your pledge of $120 or more. We'll also send you the book, How to Operate Your Home, an Owner's Manual for Your Home, from the Tom Felsa, Mr. Fix-It. We'll be glad to send that along. Again, go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552. We'd love to hear from you. Ken Adams, welcome back.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. John Freiberger, great to see you again.
Glad to be back, Larry.
You guys are busy? I know Ken's busy.
Yes, we're pretty busy right now.
Pretty busy. John, you're busy too?
We are very busy. We actually hired two more people, and we're still very busy.
Well, that's good to hear. So we've got something going on here. Let's go to Margaret in Whitewater, who has a question for you, and we'll get right to that. Margaret, hi. Thank you for calling.
I have actually two quick questions, I think.
Okay.
My brother-in-law is trying to paint an already painted aluminum door that's chipping, and the woman doesn't want to pay to have the paint removed, but he's afraid that it's going to keep chipping if he just paints over it. So is there a product that he can just apply quickly, or does he have to strip it?
Okay.
Well, I'm not sure what we mean by chipping. Is it peeling, Margaret, or is it coming off on impact, which is how I would usually understand chipping.
It's more like the chipping coming in, you know, on impact, but it's pretty bad, so it must be like any slight tap is making that paint come off.
Okay. If that's the case, it sounds like we've got some sort of bond failure with the existing paint. So if we paint over it, we are still going to have the bond failure, but it's going to be a layer down, and it's probably actually going to chip faster. So it sounds like they may actually have to strip this door.
Yeah, that's what he thought, but I thought I'd check anyway. And then pine sap off of a camper without scratching the surface. I parked under a pine tree, and there's all this sap running down the side of it, and I just can't get it off with regular soap and water.
Have you tried something like Goof Off?
Goop?
Goop might work.
Okay.
Goof Off.
Goof Off is another product. You might try a little bit of mineral spirits, something that's going to be a little light. It's not going to be hard on the paint. You may, if all else fails, you might try, if you've got a little bit of acetone or nail polish remover, you might try that. But try that on a spot that is out of the way, just to make sure. I would use that as a last resort.
Yeah, I would too, because it's pretty sensitive. Well, those are my two quick questions. I sure appreciate your help.
One other thing you might try is baking soda.
Oh, yeah, that one.
Baking soda, wet it down, put some baking soda on it, let it sit.
Mm-hmm.
And wipe it off. It's amazing how good baking soda
That's
cleans.
Oh, I love it. I'll give it the old one, too. If it's good enough for my teeth, I guess it's good enough for a camper.
All right.
Okay,
thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Margaret. Thanks for calling. Renee just removed some stains with baking soda, and I was absolutely amazed. It was like brand new again. So anyway, Hans in Madison, will go to you. Hi, Hans. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I've had a question. On my house, I had an addition put on in the 60s, and it has a flat roof that's been tarred. I have tarred it multiple times. It still leaks. I'm looking for suggestions or options for replacement. Is tar a good, or is a built-up roof good for an existing roof house with a flat roof, or am I better looking at a rubber roof or some other products? This roof could be eventually used for a deck, so I'm looking
okay.
for solutions or ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hans, I think I would probably take a look at the elastomeric membrane or rubber roofs. You've got something there that you're going to get 20 years out of. The problem with the built-up roofs is once you get some delamination of the lower layers, even though you go over the top of it, it still moves around too much. So it sounds like you're going to have to totally remove this roof. Probably put on some new Fesco board or some sort of cellulitic underlayment, and then get a good quality 60-millimeter EPDM roof put over the top
so
of that.
60-millimeter then,
yeah.
Okay.
If you are going to use it as a deck eventually, Ken and I have been using a product. They just changed the name of the company, I think, to Echolite, didn't they, Ken?
I think
Play
so,
Guard
yeah.
Surface.
Is that a white product?
I'm sorry, what product?
Is it a white plastic-like product?
No.
No, it is. Okay. Basically, it's reconstituted rubber. What's nice about it is it's a rubber mat, and it's like it's sitting on little miniature rubber Dixie cups that are all integral. So your roof will actually drain underneath it, and it snaps together in 2x2 sections. So it's a green material. It's not terribly expensive. It is distributed here in Wisconsin, though I can't remember by who. And if you Google Play Guard with a capital P and a capital G, it'll pop right up for you.
And
this goes over the new roof then.
That's right, because you do not want to walk on a rubber roof. That will definitely damage it.
Another nice thing about this product is it doesn't chafe on the roof when you have, if you put wood on it, you've got wood rubbing against rubber, and that could, you know, ruin the roof a little earlier. This might also be a good time to think about re-insulating the roof if it's inadequately
insulated.
That's
all going to have to be done, but we're trying to figure out the roof first. And if we don't do the roof, it's going to rot everything else out.
Yep. Sounds like you got a good plan, no?
All righty. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate the call, Hans. And by the way, we have some open lines for you if you'd like to join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email at talk@wpr.org. We'll turn to Rita in Arlington next. Hi, Rita.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I want to make this short. I'm just trying to understand the situation between the insulation and ventilation. And this is a roof that you really couldn't get into the crawl space to get in there. So although these people, I didn't watch them. I rent this house, but they put ventilation at the top, but I'm pretty sure they didn't put those troughs and I don't have any ventilation. So for the last 2 years, previously I just closed up my upstairs, and I have what I understand is cold in and out, and I never had a problem. But after they insulated, I have mold, and it's either mold or mildew. I don't know which one, on the inside of my walls, and a whole bunch of moisture that collects on the on plastic I put on the windows and the walls. And I'm concerned that I'm damaging the house, and I need to figure out what to tell my landlord to. Is there anything I can do? I'm trying to figure out what I can do to make this better, considering what they did, and I don't think it's going to be redone.
Yeah. One real quick question, Rita. How old is the house you're renting?
It's 150 years old.
Oh, 150 years old.
It's an old farmhouse.
Okay. All right, excellent. So it probably has very little or no insulation in the walls.
Nothing in the walls. I don't think so.
Okay, what you're going to have to do then is, whether it's mold or mildew, it's fungus. And if one will grow, the other will grow. You really have to keep the surface humidity next to the outside walls below 70%. And what that means is your relative humidity in the house is probably going to have to be 35% or lower. Otherwise, what happens is the temperature of the wall, there's charts you can look at to determine all this. But basically, in Wisconsin, if you do not want to have condensation on a 150-year-old house interior walls in the middle of the winter, you're looking at reducing your interior humidity to 35%. So you may even have to run a dehumidifier in the basement. Now, if this is an old farmhouse with a stone foundation, dirt floors, or anything like that, well, you're getting a lot of humidity in the house out of the floors. Now, if you want to go online, you can go to the Cold Climate Housing Information Center at the University of Minnesota and take a look at the Angel and Olson charts on moisture source by type. And it'll help you evaluate how much moisture you're putting into the house yourself. Number of pets, firewood storage, mopping the floor, pilot light on your stove, all of those things are
showers.
Spelled out. Showers, exactly. What is it? How many pints go in just from cooking breakfast? And so you can try to limit the humidity you put, the moisture you put into the air, but you may have to dehumidify as well because you're setting up a situation there where there could be condensation inside the wall as well as in the interstitial space, inside. That can really structurally weaken a 150-year-old house, especially if it's balloon-framed.
Okay.
So I would start there.
Cold Climate what?
It's the Cold Climate Housing Information Center, University of Minnesota. If you Google that, it should pop right up. They're going to have a bunch of information that you can download.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thank you very much for calling. And we'll take some more calls. Just a reminder, Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction, one of our guests, the other, John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting of Fitchburg. Here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, Larry Mueller here with our producer, Jim Packard. Great to have you along here as we visit with John Freiberger and Ken Adams about home repair and renovation. Jim in Green Bay up next with a question. Jim, thank you for waiting. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. I have a brick ranch house built in 1947, partial crawl space and partial full basement. I started out putting plastic in the crawl space. Then I put insulation in the rafters in the crawl space. It does not seem all that humid in there. There's a a dehumidifier running in the basement, so it doesn't seem that humid. But just the windows inside the crawl space get wet when, like last night, it was 40 degrees. So the rest of the house is dry. Just the windows inside the crawl space or above the crawl space get wet. So I am wondering two options. Someone said maybe you want to run a almost hook up a bath fan in that crawl space, bring that air out, or spray foam the inside of the crawl space walls. Do you think either one of those would help?
Yes, Jim, insulation is going to help. Now I'm assuming that this crawl space is vented into the basement, isn't it?
It is.
Okay, so then you insulated the floor, so you put insulation between the warm space and the warm space. So the best place to put that insulation would have been on the outside wall, separating the cold from the warm.
But then I'd have to dig up all around the foundation, right?
No, you can put it on the interior.
Oh, on the interior.
Yes, on the interior.
That's where I was thinking of spray foaming now.
Well, and now the one of the problems with spray foam is if you use a spray foam, you've got to have a thermal barrier over it, except in the sill boxes. So that's a little bit of an issue. So what I'd suggest you do, and you can get this online at the Department of Commerce, is there are some foams. I think Celotex MB2500 is one that comes to mind, where they have a fire barrier coating on the sheets of foam. So you can actually cut those and glue them in yourself, and they have the fire barrier right on them, so you're consistent with the Uniform Dwelling Code.
Okay. So the new two-part spray foams are not fire-resistant?
They are not. We do allow them in the sill boxes because it's a small area, but otherwise, if you use the two-part foams, you have to have a thermal barrier over them.
Okay.
The problem is when you burn foam, it gets to be really toxic, depending upon the foam. But if you just go online, make sure or call your local building inspector, and they'll give you a list of what you can use down there. And then put that in. That is going to warm up the walls. Now, the windows, Jim, do you have storms on these windows?
They're old Pella pull-down screens, which had metal frames in them. So there's not storms. I mean, they're crank-outs. They're casement windows. So they're, you know.
Yeah.
But they're metal windows.
They're metal windows, but they only do it above the crawl space. The rest of the house is dry, and whatever rooms are above that crawl space, those windows are wet in the morning.
Okay.
Well, you know, moisture will find its way to the coldest spot in the house, and then when it gets to that point, it'll condense, and that's what's happening on your window. So you have a little dehumidifier on each window, and probably the best thing to do would be to replace those windows, if you could, with something that's more energy efficient. Windows have come a long way since 1947.
Okay. It's just, you know, the rest of the house doesn't do it, and it's only on that crawl space. So that's why I was wondering, is foam on the inside of the crawl space walls gonna help, or is that cold still going to transfer from outside? Because I know there's no foam on the outside of the walls.
The interior foam is going to help, Jim. The other thing to check, because it sounds like you're still getting some moisture in that crawl space, is make sure that that plastic that you put down is sealed at the walls and any place that's overlapped, make sure it's sealed.
Okay.
Otherwise, the moisture is going to come around the edges. So if you do put foam on the inside of those walls, make sure that you somehow use an adhesive caulk to really seal up that plastic.
Okay. Okay, well, I appreciate it.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And let's go to Steve in Madison next. Hi, Steve.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm thinking winter here at ice dams. I live in a townhome condominium development, and in that big snowstorm of 2007-2008, we had tremendous problems with ice dams and leaks. And we hired John's company to come out and help us, and they did a wonderful job of inspecting, and the builder did do a lot of work. But we still get ice in the gutters and a little bit, you know, maybe 10, 12 inches up the roof in the winter. No leaks, but I'm just wondering if all that ice on the roof and in the gutters is a problem or not.
Well, Steve, you don't happen to live near Hilldale, do you?
I think I do.
Okay, yeah, I think, all right. I know exactly the issues here, even though I wasn't the partner who did it.
Right.
Yeah, what you have is you've got a very, very difficult design. And what we did is we plucked off the low-hanging fruit to try to keep your units drier. Beyond this, we're looking at some pretty significant changes, opening things up and getting spray foams and such in. At this point, if it's not leaking, if we do have some ice in the low edges of the roof and the gutters, you could simply put heat cable in there, but I know that everything is broken up into sections on your buildings.
Right.
So it's really hard to run heat cable. But you might want to take a look at that. There are a couple of electricians in town that know quite a bit about heat cabling, and you know how to email me so I can give you the name of one if you wish. But I think we've minimized the problems that you have with a very difficult design, a somewhat overly complex design, and one that is very difficult to insulate unless we take fairly drastic measures. So let's hope it'll stay dry for a while so we don't have to go to phase two, because phase two is going to cost more.
Now, right, but does the ice up there, I mean, damage the gutters or the roof shingles at all? Or
it can, if due to expansion and contraction. It should not damage the roof shingles, but they can occasionally pop joints on the gutters.
Okay.
And whoever your management company is should just keep an eye on that. If they see some leaks in the spring, then they need to go up and seal the inside of the joints in the gutters.
Okay.
All right.
Great.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We have Gary in Milwaukee. Hello, Gary.
Yeah, hi. Thank you. I would like to know what, if any, is the difference between mold and mildew. And then, secondly, I have a very heavily used bathroom. I have four kids, three of them teenagers, and my wife and I, and we have a constant problem with what I'll call mildew building up. And over the years, it's stained the grout to the point where I want to remove the grout and regrout the tile in my bathtub enclosure. So I'd like to hear your recommendation for what's the best way to remove grout and replace it.
Do you have an exhaust fan, by the way, in your bathroom?
Yes,
do your kids use it?
I still have a problem, even though there is an exhaust fan. Yes.
Okay. What's the difference between mold and mildew?
There you go, John.
I have no idea, which is why when I write a report, I say fungal growth. But basically, if one is going to grow, the other is going to grow because they're all fungi.
All right.
What I was going to and Larry approached us at the beginning here too when he asked you if you have a ventilation in there. Do the kids use it? Because quite often kids don't turn them on.
Well, lights and the exhaust fan are one and the same.
Okay,
so
good.
I did that on purpose.
Okay,
so
good, smart.
One switch controls both.
But it should be running long after the showers are over, shouldn't it, Ken?
Yeah, that would be a good idea if you could have a switch on it that would make it operable for 10, 15 minutes after they leave there. That would help really clear some of the moist air out of it. And if you were to replace the fan, there are fans out there that are automatic. When you walk into the room, they'll turn on. You can set them to stay on for 10, 20 minutes after you get out. That would be one way to help reduce some of the moisture in the room itself. With regard to the grout, you probably have grout where the corners are and where the tile meets the tub, and there's probably caulk over the top of that, and you've probably got fungal growth, John, in between that has worked its way behind the caulk and on top of the grout. Is that sound like a fair assessment?
Yes, exactly.
Right.
So what you need to do first is you need to cut out the caulking, and that's basically Stanley knife or you know, utility knife, and carefully cut it out of there. You can use some, once you get that out, you can use a little bit of baking soda or maybe a very mild bleach solution. Baking soda, like Larry said, he's got a font of good information today. It's really worth pledging to the show for all this good information. So you can clean it out with one of those products and see how it looks. And if it looks good, then re-caulk. And if it doesn't, you might have to scrape some of the grout out. And there are grout tools that you can buy at one of the big box stores or at a tile store that's very, very inexpensive. You can go from there. Does that help you out?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a baking soda and bleach combination?
No. Just a little baking soda and water.
Okay, or bleach.
Yeah,
and
or
water.
Bleach.
Or just maybe a 10% solution of bleach, tile cleaner.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, there you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jim Packard joining us once again as we're here to raise money that we need to pay for the programs that keep you in the know and entertained. That's how WPR works. The people who use it help to pay for it. So I hope you'll go now to WPR.org or call us at 888-202-2552. Call right now or email right now to ensure the future of the program you count on. That's WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And Jim, how are we doing here?
We're making progress, Larry, on our goal of 70 calls during the show. We have heard from 7 people, including 5 new members of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Very good.
And that means we've got 63 to go in the next 60
hour.
Minutes,
yeah.
Let's say, roughly. And you can help us out right now with your pledge. When you pledge at the $100 level, we'll be glad to send along How to Operate Your Home, an owner's manual for your home, written by Tom Fies of Waukesha, who's known on the radio there as Mr. Fix-It. And if you give us $100, we'll send a copy of WPR.org. I mean, sorry, a copy of that book at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And if you're wondering what your pledge pays for, well, we have toll-free numbers, so you can call in with your questions. We rely on lots of publications, read the newspaper every day, magazine subscriptions. We've got internet services so that we can research the topics of the day, and all these things, and of course, a whole lot more, have costs associated with them. So your pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 really helps to pay for them.
You may be thinking, I've never pledged before and I don't have all day. What's it like? Well, it'll take about 3 minutes of your time. You answer some basic questions, your name, your address, how much you'd like to donate, and how you'd like to pay. And that's it. Make that first donation to WPR. You'll feel good about it. And give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And we do, I think, keep you informed and entertained every day. And most of the day, I had some fun this morning. I was on this morning's program at 5 after 7 or so with Joy Cardine. I like her show a lot. Kathleen Dunn's show I like a lot. Chapter a Day. Many others you've probably come to rely on. So I think WPR gives you a window on the world like no other. And I hope you'll support this exciting mix of programs that you enjoy on this station with your contribution at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Maybe you've made the decision to become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio, but you're looking for the best way to try to fit it into your budget. A sustaining membership may be the answer. You decide on a monthly amount to be deducted from your bank account or credit card, and you set it up to be ongoing. Sustaining, automatically renewing memberships are powerful because they're cost-efficient and reliable for WPR and convenient and affordable for you. So choose a monthly amount, become a sustaining member right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And to say thanks for your ongoing contribution, we'll have a jack pine planted in the Shawamigan National Forest in your name.
And maybe one day that jack pine will grow big and tall and it'll be harvested and it might wind up back in your own home.
Yeah, it could be ethanol and you might be drinking it.
We have 63 more contributors to go to reach our goal. I hope you'll give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Ask for the book, How to Operate Your Home, Second Edition, an Owner's Manual for Your Home, when you give $100 or more at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Please donate right now. And thanks to everybody who's already donated. And thanks to Pat from Brown Deer, who is online, been waiting with a question. Let's go to Pat. Hi, Pat. Thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. I have a question about painting siding.
Okay.
I don't know. The home was built in 1971. I don't know what, I haven't done much research on the involvement of painting siding.
Is it aluminum siding?
I'm assuming so. I don't think it's vinyl. I'm sitting here looking at it. It looks pretty aluminum to me.
One way you could find out is go tap it with your finger, and if it's got a little tinny sound to it, it's probably aluminum. And if it's very flexible and it's got a plastic, it'll have a plasticky feel to it. It'll have a little more give and so forth. You can paint them both. Aluminum paints better than vinyl. it holds up longer. But there are special paints for both products. You really have to find out which one it is before you try painting it. And either one, you'll want to do a little bit of prep work with it, and the paint manufacturer or supplier will be able to help you with that.
You know, we had an aluminum home. My last home before the one we have now was an aluminum siding home. Mm-hmm. We had that repainted. Now we've lived in our current home for 15 years, and we drove by the old home the other day, and the paint job still looked good. Well, and that would have been 15, 16 years ago. So,
well, there's a testament that to being able to paint.
You can
that.
Do it.
Okay, do I get a specialty painter, or do I just look in the phone book and just call a painter? Just any kind of painter.
Well,
they would know.
So you're going to hire this out. You're not going to try doing this yourself.
Oh,
is that correct?
No.
Oh, okay.
No,
well, what I would do is I would call at least three different painters. Ask okay. One of the first questions you ask after finding out if they're insured and how long they've been in business is to ask them if they have experience painting either aluminum or vinyl siding.
Okay.
And what their experience is, and.
Right.
Let them describe it to you, and you could make a decision. I would have all three of them come out and look at it. Usually it doesn't cost you anything, and they will tell you what kind of siding you have and mm-hmm. recommend what kind of paint would take to do it. But make mm-hmm. sure they have experience with this, with painting vinyl or aluminum siding.
Okay.
Good luck.
Yep.
Bye.
Thank you.
Yep, thanks, Pat. Joe in Clinton, hello to you.
Hello there. I've got another question about basement. I have a 150-year-old country home with limestone walls, and when it rains, water doesn't just seep in. It sometimes runs in. So I was thinking about having somebody come out and dig a trench around the basement and put in the drain tile, which would go to the sump pump. I also thought, isn't an option to have somebody come in and, like, pour a concrete wall inside and to keep the water, or at least the majority of the water, out?
The concrete inside is probably not going to do a whole lot. It's probably going to be a pretty low return on investment. Your outside drainage, gutters, controlling the sheet flow off the roofs are where you need to start. Is your house just really poorly drained? Is it just a very, very flat area where the water comes in very quickly?
There are, yeah. And the old limestone definitely has cracks in it and holes in it and... It lets in a lot of water, and I've put in gutters.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried to fill in next to the house so that there's a flow away from the house.
Good.
But still, it just seems there's always water down there, and the basement has no windows and no ventilation.
Mm-hmm. So it's damp, 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 just like mine.
Damp, damp, damp. And what the other question is do I drill through some of those bricks and remove them and try and put in some kind of ventilation?
I don't think you really need to do that. Your basement is probably a conditioned space because your heat ducts and your water pipes are down there, so we don't want to vent to the outside because having 25 below temperatures coming in through those vents in the winter wouldn't be good.
Right.
And do you have forced air heat?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So you're getting a bunch of air changes because your heating return system sucks. And by that I mean that generally the return ducts are fastened looser than the supply ducts because the supply ducts are pressurized. And so you tend to pull air out of the basement into the return and then send it upstairs with the furnace. So you have some air changes anyway. So
yep.
You want to get a good dehumidifier in there. An interior water collection system probably makes a lot of sense. You could simply put that in and concrete it in with cactus board or something along the edges so that the water runs into a sump pump. Be sure that that water is ejected far from your house. Mine runs something like 30 meters out to a ditch because you really have to get water away from these foundations. These foundations leaked when they were brand new.
Okay.
And the problem is the more water that comes through them, the leakier they get. So make sure you keep your mortar well maintained. Put in the water collection system. Use dehumidification. And that should do as much as you can. You can put soil against these walls, but you've got to be a little bit careful. Some of them stick out of the ground 2 or 3 feet, and they need to breathe to both sides because the walls themselves, stone is a very heavy form of sponge, and we don't want a lot of moisture going into the stone, not being able to breathe to the outside, and then going into the old wood that is resting on that stone. So it's a pretty complex situation. But I think water collection, so that you get it out of there quick. Plus the dehumidification are the first places to start.
All right. Okay. There you go.
What if I dug a trench inside the wall that ran to the sump pump that's in the basement? Because the basement floor is uneven.
Right. So right. You're going to have to do that.
Right. That's what I meant, Joel. You don't want to try to put it on the exterior because the mortar is decalcified on the exterior. So you just want to have a water collection system on the inside to pick up that water that came through the wall and to get rid of it before it evaporates.
Some kind of stone saw that will saw kind of a trench, a hole in that concrete and...
Yes.
Drain tiles to the sump pump?
Just check with your local waterproofing contractor. What, $1,500 to $2,000, Ken, is sort of typical for going all the way around a basement, putting in a crock.
They could probably do it for less money than it would take you to buy all the parts and rent the equipment and do it yourself.
Okay.
And you don't have to suck concrete dust.
I had it done, and I tell you what, carrying all the
the debris out of
here. The debris out and so forth. That in and of itself, I was really glad I was paying. I think I spent $2,000 on it, and it was every penny well spent,
It's a yucky job.
It is a yucky job. Thanks. Good luck, Joe. Thank you. Dave emailed in, you've got a tube of spray foam, and it got plugged up. How do you unplug? How do you free a plugged tube of spray foam?
Oh, Ken has the answer for that.
There's only one answer. If it's a little can of great stuff for one of those products, you have to throw it out. There's just no way. Unless it's hardened just in the tube and it's only a couple hours old, there's no way to really clean it out. But if it's last, we assume that when you open the can, if you can't use it all, we look for ways to use it up because there's really no saving it.
All right. There you go. Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction, John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates, our guests here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we'll take some more questions and back to the phones. Let's go to Steve and Stevens Point next. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Good program. Thanks for having it.
Sure.
My wife and I are buying a house. It's a bi-level, and the basement is about maybe a third actually underground, and two-thirds of it is above the ground. We're expecting very, very cold floors down there this winter and want to do something to keep them a little warmer. Let me run my idea past you and I'll take your advice off the air. I was going to put down a sheet of plastic on the floor, put 2x4s, treated 2x4s flat on the plastic, and then run a plywood floor over top of the 2x4s. In the voids between the 2x4s, I was going to put foam, 2-inch foam, just to help pad the floor and keep it insulated. And I just want to make sure that, because it is a condensation point where cold meets warm, I want to make sure that we're not going to have mold growth or anything underneath. So what would you suggest?
All right.
I would suggest not putting the 2x4s down on the floor because you are still going to get condensation down there. What I suggest you do is to put down your plastic sheet, but then cover the entire floor with rigid insulation. And you can get rigid insulation that you can then put the 2x4 sleepers on top of it, and it won't compress it. So that it's basically a structurally, well, it's not a structural insulation, but it's a type of isocyanurate that we use on roofs and things where you can walk over it and it doesn't compress under loads. So that would be the best vapor barrier, then a thermal barrier, then any cellulose products, because it is still, just because your basement is going to get damp, you know, you're always going to have humidity in the basement, and if it's cold under there, the cellulose is mold food. So once you get to 70% humidity under the floor with the low temperatures, you're going to start having fungi eating that wood. So put in a complete thermal barrier plus a complete vapor barrier before you do anything on those basement floors. The other thing to think about is maybe you want to put ceramic tile on these floors, and you can put in the electric floor mats to warm them. You don't want to necessarily heat the rooms with them, but you can make them very comfortable, because by the time you do all of this other work, you've got a bunch of money in that. And some of the floor systems, I think Cozy Heat, I think, is one of them. Ken, you can maybe help me. They vary immensely in prices, probably by 400%.
Yeah.
But some of the very simple mat systems, that you can put in can work very well under ceramic tile. So you've got a very clean floor, you've got a warm floor, you can throw rugs over the top of it and not worry about condensation underneath. So look at a couple of different options. Talk to an electrician, talk to somebody who does flooring work in your area, and see if they've got some additional ideas.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thank you for calling. And Ben in Madison, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Ben.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Yes, a quick question for you. I have a vaulted ceiling, a house that was built in 1959, and so it's all cathedral ceiling, and it's a 312 pitch. It's really shallow, and it's got a rubber roof on it. And I had the soffit, the eaves weren't draining, so I had the soffit go bad. I pulled it off, and I realized in the roof itself, there's some 6-inch batting from probably that vintage that's really probably only about 3 inches tall now. And yep. I'm trying to figure out if I could just make that into a hot roof.
What do you mean?
What do you mean by hot roof?
Well, I mean just packing it full of insulation, just like doing a spray insulation up in there and sealing it all up and making it one solid piece instead of having the air vent, because it's not very efficient the way it is. The R value is very, very low.
Yes. Well, the short answer to that is yes, you could do that, but it's fairly complicated because you want to make sure you get all of the fiberglass out. The fiberglass will work against you, and you'll want to blow a two-part polyurethane foam into that space. The problem with that is you can't just reach up and foam it. You'll have to take either the roof off or the ceiling off to do it. And I take it it's a drywall ceiling below?
It's a drywall ceiling below.
And what shape is the rubber in?
The rubber's in excellent shape. It's probably only about 10 years old.
Uh-huh. I was going to say, if you need to re-roof it, that's a good time to go in from the top, and you can do it. But to insulate it properly from the bottom, you'd have to take the drywall off and blow your foam in, and then re-drywall it. If it's 5.5 inches, you're right on the edge of useful insulation. If you were going to take your ceiling off, you could fill those cavities full of insulation. You could add another inch or whatever you can get away with, a continual solid insulation like a polyisocyanate sheathing, and then a vapor barrier over that, and then re-drywall it. It's a little bit convoluted to do, but it'd be a great way to warm up the place.
It really would, Ken. You'd be up to about an R43 then.
Yeah,
and then that would really give you a good ceiling. And because the foam is going to act as a vapor barrier as well as a thermal barrier and an air barrier, that's good. And then you can put a secondary barrier down as well, both a secondary thermal barrier with the foam and with the visqueen. So that would give you one heck of a change. Your current ceiling, you've probably got roughly R11.
And that's if the insulation's puffy. If it's crammed in there, it's not doing any good.
Well, I was figuring R11 with it probably subsided a little bit. But, you know, you're looking at 400% increase in what you currently have.
Yeah.
So it ain't cheap, but over time it'd be really a payback, and your comfort level would really improve.
All right. There you go. Thank you very much for calling, and good luck to you. Appreciate your call and your question. Larry Mueller here. Jim Packer joining us. Thanks to everyone who is a sustainer or who has already contributed during this drive, or maybe who contributes regularly by mail. I have friends who do that as well. As a nonprofit public service radio station, we rely on listeners like you for a large portion of our income, about 40%, nearly 40% anyway. And if you haven't given yet, now is the time during this program at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552. Any progress, Jim? Or?
Larry, we're making progress. We've heard from 18 people, including 13 new members so far in the program. We have a goal of 70 calls for the full program, and so we're looking for 52 calls. And if you've made your call, thank you for giving already. And if not, why, help us stay on track by making a contribution right now. WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. You decide the amount of your pledge. If you do decide at the $100 level, we'll send you the book, How to Operate Your Home, second edition, and owner's manual for your home. That includes more than 400 drawings and some simple explanations to describe the operation of the structural, electrical, and mechanical systems in your home. One chapter has recommended books and magazines. Another chapter has references for manufacturers in home-related businesses, including addresses, 800 numbers, websites. So it's the kind of information you can't find elsewhere. It's all collected into this book, and it's available with your pledge at the $100 level at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
$100 or more. You might have found yourself hovering near the radio, drawn into a great discussion. That's happened to me, where I've sat in the car when I got to where I was going because I wanted to hear the end of what the discussion. You appreciate the guest knowledge. I know I do. And I also appreciate the caller's questions and views as well. And if that kind of thing has happened to you, I hope you'll make your pledge of support at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. It doesn't take long, does it, Jim?
No, it doesn't, Larry. It only takes about 3 minutes of your time. You tell us your name, your contact information, how much you'd like to give, how you'd like to pay. Using a credit card does save time, postage, and paper. Put your money to work right away. Or consider signing up for EFT, electronic funds transfer, from your bank account, which saves even more time, postage, and paper. So no matter how you choose to give, take those 3 minutes right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And let's hear from a listener.
Many listeners tune in to Wisconsin Public Radio all day long.
8 hours. From the time I get to work in the morning till the time I go home at night, in the car on the way home for lunch and on the way home after work till 5 o'clock at night. Every day, Monday through Friday.
You can count on our being there for you. Can we count on you for a pledge of financial support today? Call now. Here's the number.
The number 888-202-2552, or just go online to WPR.org to make your contribution. And maybe your gift is $50 or $100 or $500. That'd be great, too. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount, frankly. Go to WPR.org or call at 888-202-2552. Still a ways to go, Jim.
That's right, Larry. We need 52 calls if we're to make our goal of 70 calls for the program. Pledges like yours keep us on track to support the programs that you do count on. Thanks if you've already given. If not, give now. WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. It's important for you to decide how much you'd like to pledge. Ask for the book, How to Operate Your Home, an owner's manual for your home, when you give $100 or more at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And I'm pretty sure that today Ken and John have already helped several people, specifically with problems they have. And maybe you had one of those problems, too, and were listening in and you were helped. I value the kind of information we get from guests like John and Ken. You value WPR for the lifelong learning it brings to your life. You learn something here every day, something new every day, year after year. It's kind of a continuing education, and it's possible only because of support from listeners like you. So, like any education, you get out of it what you put into it. So I hope you'll invest in your education today at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
That pledge will take just a few minutes of your day, and in return, you'll get back so many great programs. If you can, consider a donation of $1,000. Your $1,000 contribution makes a significant difference in our budget and helps us bring you the talk, the news, music, stories, and entertainment that you count on from WPR. Your donation of any amount to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 will help ensure that our community and our state get the public radio we deserve.
You hear great guests all day long on the Ideas Network. This is really a unique radio service in the nation, and it's your support that makes it possible. So pledge now for the station you rely on and enjoy. You could do it by going to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
your employer might provide matching funds for your donation. I don't think we've talked about that.
No, we haven't.
Yet this week, you could double, maybe even triple, the value of your gift to WPR. If you don't know whether your employer will match your gift, pledge now and ask your human resources department the next time you get a chance. Pledge your support to this program and to WPR at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You support the things that make your life more meaningful. I'm pretty sure of that. Wisconsin Public Radio, I think, is one of those things. It informs you about events in our region and the world, entertains with music, with humor, storytelling. And on this program, a lot of great advice. Oftentimes today we're talking about housing. Lots of great advice from our guests today. Your contribution provides the resources we need to give you the news and information that you'll need in the coming year. Your pledge, any amount, will make a difference at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. We moved a couple more people.
That's right. We've moved up to 20 calls received so far this morning, and a goal of 70 means that we've got 50 calls left to get our goal. Give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Consider becoming a sustaining member by making an automatically renewing monthly contribution from your bank account or credit card. The more sustainers we have, the more stable we are. And to thank you, we'll plant a tree, a jack pine, in the Shawamigan National Forest in your name. Larry, I'm looking at Paula from Green Bay, who says, in getting my garden into shape, I listen to WPR as often as I can because it gives me ideas that I can use in my everyday life. She must be referring to our garden talk with Larry Mueller. And we thank you so much for that pledge and for the kind words.
And kind words from Gene and David and Paula and Greg. Many folks have said some kind words. If you haven't contributed now, I hope you'll do it right now. We're taking a little news break, and then we'll be back with Ken and John to answer more of your questions. But go right now to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. Talking home renovation and repair today with Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison and John Freiberger of Freiberger Consulting of Fitchburg. Great to have them back, and thank you for listening in. We're going to go right to the phones. Brian in Appleton's been waiting a while, so let's go to Brian. Hi, Brian. Thanks for waiting.
Thanks for the call. I have a question. We have an older two-story house that has the water heater on one end of the house, and then we have an upstairs master bathroom on the second floor. I was speaking to another gentleman today, and he was suggesting that you could possibly align off of the hot water pipe and then somehow or another tie it back into the water heater so that you can use it as a recirculator. So
yes.
That you would have hot water right away. And his theory was is that even if you're recirculating the water, there's going to be less draw for the water heater than it would be if you're running the faucet upstairs with 5-6 gallons to get the hot water up there. And it would have to refill the water heater and replace that with cold water, you know, and then has to heat the cold water.
I don't have any documentation on what the cost difference is, but I do know that recirculators tend to be very, very nice for people who have a hot water heater far away from the unit that they want to, or from the point of use. So so that is a possibility. Another thing you might want to consider is that you could, for a very reasonable amount of money now, get a point of use a tankless water heater. A waterless water heater doesn't really work, but a tankless water heater, so that only when you turn on the faucet, the water heater is very close to that that location, and it just you have an unlimited supply of water when you need it, and when you don't need it, you're not heating up the tank. Do you want to add anything to that, John?
One thing you can look for on the recirculator pumps is they have a little time of day. You can punch in the time of day,
right?
Because you're not going to be taking a shower at noon most days,
mm-hmm.
So you can run the circulation from 6:30 in the morning till 8 o'clock, and so that saves the electricity. The other thing to think about is if you have copper pipes, you cannot recirculate more than 6 gallons a minute, or the pipes will erode.
Okay, there you go.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Treva in Ottawa, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. We have a flooding basement. House was built in 71. It flooded badly in 93, again in 2008, and this year twice. Whenever we get a lot of rain, the water table gets too high. The soil is sloped away from the home. The downspouts are 8 to 10 feet away, so that doesn't seem to be an issue. But when the water table gets too high, the water comes through cracks in the floor. Never comes through the walls, just through the floor. And we've been told there is no solution other than put the house on stilts. Or another guy said he could put a trench through the middle of the basement to collect the water. Oh, let me add, too, the drain tile seems to work fine. The sump pump works fine. So he said put a trench through the middle to collect the water. And we said, okay, but then what keeps it from coming through the cracks that are still there? And he said, okay, well, we can put in two trenches. So I'm not convinced that that's the solution, and we're not sure where to go with this other than our marriage won't survive another flood.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully we'll help you with your relationship.
Good.
It sounds like your consultant really doesn't understand what's going on there completely, because if he did, he would ask a lot more questions and do a lot more research before he made a recommendation.
Yeah.
You say you have a sump pump system in the house. Is the drain tile around the outside perimeter when it was built, or was this something that was retrofit?
No, it was added, obviously, because of flooding, and it's on the inside perimeter.
And the contractor cut a trench around and put drain tile around the outside of the foundation?
Well,
The inside of the foundation.
I think it's on the inside, yes, because that's where you can see the patching.
Yeah, I misspoke. And that's not helping you out?
It's not enough, no.
Okay. I wonder...
Man, I'm... Did they go all the way around?
Yes.
Because I wonder if there's any possibility that the tube is starting to fill up and not allowing enough water to go through, and it's just overloading the system.
Okay.
Has anybody that's looked at this put a camera in the sump tubes and take a look to see if there's something in there or
no?
That may be something that's available to you, John. What would you do?
Well, hydrostatic pressure.
Move.
Ottawa's a pretty darn nice place to live. I think we could help you out.
We do like it here.
Yeah. No, I have the same problem in my house. I've got a collection system in one half of the basement, and the other half of the basement still gets wet because it's too far away.
Mm-hmm.
You get enough hydrostatic head pressure, especially if you're in a sandy soil. Even though you have a perimeter collection system, you can still get water coming up through cracks in the middle of the floor. And you pretty much have to look at where it's coming up and then plan you may need to add additional drain tile. One of the other problems that you can sometimes have is they didn't do a real good job of putting in the original drain tile. If they didn't put in enough wash gravel, if they didn't put in a good silt sock, it may not be as effective as a really well-designed system was. And, of course, that's nothing that we can diagnose over the over the radio.
No.
Okay. Well, I thank you. At least I know where to head.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Sam in Whitewater, let's go to you next. Hi, Sam. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I have an enclosed porch that I'm remodeling, and I want to insulate the floor and also the ceiling and walls. And my question is, I can't get to the floor from underneath, and I'm planning to take up the flooring and put insulation in. And what do I need to do for vapor barrier under that?
Is the porch up above the ground, or is it sitting on the ground? Or
oh, no, it's about 18 inches above the ground.
Okay. Well, when you take the floor up, one thing that you could consider doing, let me back up and ask one more question. Is the perimeter open to the weather, or is there a foundation around this?
There's a foundation, and it's sealed, so I can't get to it from the outside.
I see. Well, a couple things. One is when you pick up the flooring, and you can stand basically between your floor joists, you could put plastic down on the ground below, making sure it's sealed around the perimeter. You'll want to
lay it, just lay it on the ground?
You could lay it on the ground, but then there are some adhesive caulks that are made that you could caulk to the foundation wall and then actually glue the plastic so that there's no openings in that vapor barrier.
Well, would that be like 3 mil plastic, something like that?
No, I wouldn't. I would use something much more much thicker. I would say at least 6 mil would be the way to go.
Okay.
And you know, plastic, even though it's not cheap as it used to be, it's still inexpensive, and you want it to last as long as possible. That's one. Another thing that you'll want to do is you're going to want to get a vent somewhere in that. I don't know if it's vented now, but if it's not, you'll need a vent in that foundation. So you'll need at least, how big is the place?
It's about 8 by 15.
So you probably need about, I don't know, it's about a full square foot.
Mm-hmm.
A full square foot of ventilation, and you could put a little bit on each side so that air can move through. That would be the ideal way to do it. You'd have to cut a hole in the foundation big enough to put your vent in. Then what you can do is, and I'm going to ask you again, how thick your floor joists are. You won't know that yet.
I don't know.
Okay,
yet.
Of course not. But one way to deal with it is if you've got, say, a 2x10 floor joist, you could put little nailers, we call them sleepers, right on the bottom of the floor joists and drop a piece of exterior-grade plywood on top of those and then insulate above that. And that'll hold your insulation in place. You could either use foam. You could use dense pack cellulose insulation. We're getting farther and farther away from fiberglass. I wouldn't use fiberglass anymore. And then you could, but then you can put your floor over that. Does that help you?
Yeah, that does. Thank you very much.
Yeah, great. Thanks a lot.
Yep. Have fun.
Dennis in Green Bay. Hello to you.
Hello. Got a question for you. We have an older house, about 100 years old, and when the wind blows, you can feel it all over coming through outlets and things like that. I've replaced some of the windows and filled in all the counterweights with great stuff for windows to try to fill all those gaps. But I'm wondering, as far as cost effectiveness, would it be better to take the siding off, and it's got some of the old wood lath in the back that used to be a stucco house, and they just put some cheap white styrofoam over that and then put the siding on. So I could take all that off and then put an inch of insulating board on it and then wrap it in Tyvek. Would that be a cost-effective way of trying to cut down some of the wind leakage blowing through the house? Or is there a better way of doing it?
That's actually a great way of doing it. Your Tyvek gives you your wind barrier. Your foam gives you additional insulation, and you should be able to then put your new siding over the top of that and make a huge improvement. Remember, since you have a 100-year-old house, Dennis, that when you paint the interior, the exterior wall should be painted with a vapor barrier paint because you're going to be changing the thermal characteristics of those walls. Those walls aren't going to dry anymore because the wind isn't blowing through them, so we need to keep the moisture out. So take a look at a vapor barrier paint and use that on the interior so you don't get condensation inside those walls.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Brock in Madison. Let's go to you now. Hi, Brock.
Hello. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I have a question about how to treat a new treated pine deck. It's 11 months old, sits about 6 feet off the ground. It has had no stain or sealant put on it of any sort, and I'd like to get something on it before this winter. There are water-based, oil-based stains and treatments, some with acrylic. Any advice on this?
Well, in my experience, treated lumber really is hard to keep a coat of finish on when it's out exposed to the weather. What you can do is you can get an exterior-grade sealing stain, put it on, and realize that on all the flat surfaces, including the tops of the railings and the deck, you'll probably be putting it on every couple of years. That's just the way it is with treated lumber.
Sure.
So that's it, but I wanted to say one thing back to the last caller and also to everybody else that is looking to do some energy efficiency work on their house. John and I really highly recommend doing an energy audit, Focus on Energy type energy audit. You can call or email Focus on Energy to find your local people. It's a great way to map your house and know exactly what needs to be done to improve the energy efficiency of your home. Just a great thing to do, wouldn't you say, John?
I agree completely.
And the other thing is, public radio.
Listen to public radio. That's right. You know, Jim Packard listens to public radio, don't you, Jim?
Continuously, Larry.
he's with us again. He was in the other room answering calls, and he was so excited to get in here. He came running in, so here he is, and he's with us to help me and help Wisconsin Public Radio with our campaign, our fall membership drive. The goal is simple: raise the money we need to pay for the programs you listen to because you value public radio. Please take care of public radio. Do your part by contributing now at WPR.org or by calling 888-202-2552. And how are we doing?
Well, Larry, we're moving up. We've got 25 pledges counted for our goal of 70, so we've got 45 to go in the next 10 minutes. And you can make your pledge right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. You decide the amount of your pledge. Ask for the book, How to Operate Your Home, and Owner's Manual for Your Home when you give at the $100 level or more at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. So make your pledge right now.
Right now. And we're joined by Mike Crane stopping by as well, our director of Wisconsin Public Radio. And Mike?
Well, I get to be focused on the really big goals. Of course, when I'm here asking for people's support, I'll worry about 25 calls, 50 calls. But the overall goal for the campaign, and this is by 6 o'clock tomorrow evening, is $1,075,000. So that's a really big number.
A lot of money.
It is a big number. However, we're only about $195,000 away from that, and we really can get there with everybody's help. I know it sounds like a big number, but truly, that's been happening with people contributing $5, $50, $500, totally whatever they decide. And so I'm just here to let you know how the overall campaign is going and to encourage you to help us to fund Larry's program and all of the great programs on the Ideas Network by going to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And what's the how much do we still need?
So we still need about $195,000.
Oh, well, Jim, can we do that this hour?
If I hit the lottery in the next hour, I will turn over all of those funds to Wisconsin Public
But it wouldn't surprise me at all if someone did call and pledge $1,000 or go online and pledge $500 right now to help us along the way.
Mike, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for stopping by. So there's the overall goal. We're about $195,000 to go. And for this particular program, we have 44 pledges that we're looking for. And I know you've been enjoying the conversation with Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison and John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates of Fitchburg. They've been with us for years to talk about home improvement and repairs. They've been, obviously, they donate their time. We're not paying them. I hope you'll take a few minutes to make this hour in particular, and the many hours to come as well, possible. Put a value on the programs you enjoy every day. Then make your pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. 44 to go.
That's right. Giving is so easy. All it takes is a gift of a dollar or two a week and a few minutes of your time. That'll add up to $50 or $100 for the year, and all year long you'll benefit from the program and all of the other WPR programs that you've come to enjoy. Let me just take a second, Larry, and walk through this book to tell people what it contains, because
it's a great book.
Illustrative book. Chapter 1, start it up, take the first spin. Chapter 2, environmental and safety concerns. You know, your lead, asbestos, radon, and such. Utility systems are chapter 3, heating and air conditioning. It goes on to electrical in chapter 4, plumbing and water supply in 5. We've got the general home systems, like foundations, structures, things like that in chapter 6. Fun yet serious systems like fireplaces and wood stoves, whirlpool baths, hot tubs in chapter 7, service requirements in 8, emergency simple solutions in 9, and it goes on with 10 more chapters from there. So it's a book that
wonderful
is
book.
Chock full of it, of material for you.
And it's yours for a contribution of $100 or more. Go to WPR.org. Or 888-202-2552. And let's hear from another listener.
Warning. Listening to Wisconsin Public Radio can be addictive. Don't believe me? Just ask our listeners.
I am an addict for NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. You do a great job.
I'm hopelessly addicted to public radio, and it's to the point I'm actually starting to send you people money. I've been doing it for years.
Can I sue public radio for being addicted to talk radio? I can't shut you guys off. You're wonderful.
I don't know what to do. Maybe I could try sending you painful amounts of money.
We more than welcome painful amounts of money, and we gladly accept whatever you can afford. Call in now with your pledge. Here's the number.
It's 888-202-2552. That's the phone number. But you can also go online to WPR.org. Whichever way you do it, why now would be a great time. We got about 5 minutes or so to go in drive here before the end of this program, and we'd love to have a vote right now, wouldn't we, Jim?
We do indeed. We're looking for 42 pledges in the next few minutes, so thanks if you've already given today or in the past. If not, help us stay on track by making your contribution right now. WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. You decide how much to pledge. Ask for the book, How to Operate Your Home, the second edition owner's manual, when you give $100 or more at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552 and give us a pledge right now.
42 to go. Think about how often you tune into Wisconsin Public Radio. Maybe it's every day on your way to work or over the lunch hour and then some more on the weekends. It's an important part of your life. Your day would be different, probably worse, if you couldn't catch your favorite programs. Make a contribution to keep this station that you rely on strong at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Glad to hear from Mike Crane that we have about $195,000 to go. We do it one call at a time. Yours is very, very important. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Larry, some listeners think that Wisconsin Public Radio operates largely with tax dollars. We do get some funding from the federal government, and we get some from the state. But listener contributions make up our largest single source of income, nearly 40% of our program budget. You can get the full picture at funding.wpr.org. The fact is, your support is vital in keeping Wisconsin Public Radio on the air. Now that you know, make a pledge of support at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And maybe you've only discovered Wisconsin Public Radio recently. We've heard from some people that way. Maybe you've been listening for years. We want you to know that Wisconsin Public Radio is listener-driven. It's not profit-driven. Our business is to inform and entertain you, we hope, and provide quality programs for you to enjoy. WPR is your station, so I hope you'll pledge your support now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552, down to 39.
When you pledge, you'll be adding your voice to the more than 45,000 members who support Wisconsin Public Radio. Your contribution of any amount joins other members' contributions to make up nearly 40% of our budget. We use the money to bring you great programs every day. So make your pledge right now, WPR.org, or at 888-202-2552. And you're right, Larry, 39 to go.
39 more to go. Please help us out here. Several ways to make your pledge. Giving on the web is really efficient for us. Just go to WPR.org. If you're online now, you barely have to stop what you're doing in order to do that. When you pledge online, you save us the cost of sending a reminder. You save yourself the cost of a stamp, the bother of writing a check, WPR.org. It's just that simple. Just a couple more minutes to go. Help us out here.
When you give, you'll be helping us by now dropping us to 38 calls to make our goal of 70 for the program. Why not become the 34th caller in the program so far this hour? Give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Consider becoming a sustaining member by making an automatically renewing monthly contribution from your bank account or credit card. The more sustainers we have, the more stable we are. So thank you. We'll plant a tree in Wisconsin on your behalf.
Do it right now. Make your contribution. Join the many folks who have already contributed. We're 36 more calls to go to reach our goal, and we can do it. We'll have a few more minutes to go. We have to go away in just a few seconds, but if you haven't contributed yet, I hope you will do it now. Please go to WPR.org or call us at 888-202-2552. Let me give you that again. It's WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Oh, we dropped again. Help us out. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thanks to everybody who's contributed. Still time to contribute during this hour. Thank you very much for listening.